Welcome to the Road Less Traveled podcast, listeners, the podcast that is a recollection of my time spent in prison. And while my voice may sound cheerful, the events were, I did have some good times. Let's not get carried away. I mean, it would be insane to say that every second was absolute misery. But it wasn't awesome. It was not the best of times. I am your host, DB. I don't know. I always enjoy doing these episodes, you know, because I get to put a little creative spin on things. It is a way of me coping and kind of disseminating all the stuff that I went through. And I've covered just the sheer boredom of prison. That would actually probably be the most torturous portion of it, other than, of course, the people. Stellar company, highly recommend. So on this episode, I talked about, my time firefighting and all those fun things. And that organization that I worked for, during the off season when we weren't fighting fires, we were doing a lot of other projects as well. It's not like we got to just work, 3 to 5 months out of the year, and then we just sat around in prison for the rest of it. No, there was the off season. And for the off season, we did a lot of forestry projects. So we would wade out into the middle of the absolute nowhere forests. A lot of national parks. So if you just see a bunch of random guys standing around, cutting trees down or building piles of wood and all the dead and down things from trees and, kind of creating what looks like a giant either dome or possibly teepee-shaped pile. Well, they're not just forestry service people. There is also a possibility that they are inmates. Especially if they have, like, the kind of generic, like, those guys are all wearing, like, the same kind of faded blue button-up shirt that looks cheap. Yeah, probably prison labor. So, what they had us do was we would go literally into forests or, national parks and whatnot. And then we would cut down various trees that were either hazards or overgrowth or, for example, they could be hazardous to the other flora and fauna in that park or wherever we happened to be at the time. So we would remove those trees, sometimes we would have to get, more equipment if they wanted us to remove the stumps. But generally speaking, they just wanted us to cut down the trees themselves. They wanted us to, like, thin out different areas. And so you would see these pyramidal or teepee-shaped piles that we would build. Because in winter, we would come back to all these piles that we, staged out throughout the forest. And it would be kind of a trip, like, as you would walk by, you could, obviously, if you're on a trail, look to your left or right, and you would just see these mounds all throughout the forest. And during winter, we would burn those piles because there would be enough snow on the ground that the fire wouldn't spread, and then it would just turn into ash and all that fun stuff, and then that would help aerate the soil, put more nutrients in there, et cetera, et cetera. Cycle of life, it's great. Circle. Of life. So we were doing a very good thing. I liked being out in the middle of nowhere. There was a certain level of camaraderie shared between the all-male cast that I was surrounded by. But it was fun. It was a lot of juvenile fun, messing around, people throwing pine cones at each other, or just endless gay jokes, just nonstop toxic masculinity. But, some of it was fun, some of it was humorous. And, overall, we were doing a decent thing. Although there was one time we were on a highway beautification project where we were, just picking up garbage off the side of the road. Our crew boss was behind us in the buggy, which, one, that was partly a safety thing. Because every once in a while you read on the news that some vehicle just takes out a group of people picking up garbage on the highway. It just seems to happen. So he, knowing that, that occasionally happens, he was behind us in the buggy for safety reasons and also, you know, to keep an eye on us. But yeah, we would just be walking by with a garbage bag in our hand and we would be canvassed out in a straight line about, you know, arm's width. And that's all we did for day in and day out for sometimes weeks at a time. And we would just do stretches of miles of road. But one of those times, we were picking up garbage and we were also gathering up a bunch of sagebrush because, you know, it had been high winds and those motherfuckers got scattered all over the place. And so I found myself, I was in one of those giant, like, semi-truck dumpster size dumpsters and, just throwing sagebrush in there. And they needed me to get inside the dumpster to help stomp down all the sagebrush, which, thankfully my allergies weren't bothering the hell out of me. So I was just stomping them down. And, I looked over, like, I was with another inmate. His name was Jesse. And we were just stomping down these sagebrush, and there was, like, garbage all in the dumpster with us and whatnot. And we both kind of, like, paused to take a break because we were, you know, a little tired from stomping. And we look over, and we notice what the road, the sign was. And we were on Rock Bottom Road. And for some reason, that was just fucking hilarious to us. We're in prison, in a dumpster, on Rock Bottom Road. It pretty much was like a sign, like, this is it, guys. Like, you know, change your ways, or this is it. So, you know, I got a little laugh out of that, and I didn't mind those types of projects. The highway beautification projects, those were always fine. As listeners, you probably think, like, okay, cool, you know, nothing wrong about making the highway look a little nicer. Actually, so here's something you would never consider because you're normal people. I was always worried when we went out on these highway beautification projects because there was a lot of times where I was looking for garbage. I was, you know, doing what I was told to do, which was pick up trash. A majority of the other people were having their eyes on the ground canvassing for drugs or weapons. You know, not so, or cigarettes, usually cigarettes. They were trying to get cigarette butts so they could get tobacco, which, you know, would fetch a high price on the yard. And so they would just, like, save up as many cigarette butts as they could and then just sell the tobacco. People would use Bible paper to roll that tobacco and then smoke it. But, you know, every once in a while, somebody was able to find drugs. You never know what gets thrown out of a car. You know, it's the untold stories. Some of it's fascinating. It's almost like a modern day, when you take that metal detector to the beach. Holy shit, does that tell everyone how old I am? I guess it's just, you know, kind of a bummer. There's, like, generations of kids that don't grow up with certain things. Like, to me, that was my equipment. I never had a metal detector, but, you know, I grew up where there was a beach, and I also grew up where we could go outside. So that was, like, part of my childhood was scavenging or, like, going out and finding things. And, you know, there was the adventure of it all. So just kind of seems like a bummer we don't have that or as much. Anyway, getting off topic. So I was always worried people would find some sort of, like, dumbass thing, like, oh my god, how did you fucking find that kind of thing? And then, like, collectively, we would get in trouble because of that thing. You know, they were usually dumb enough to try to immediately smuggle it in, which, you know, we got searched. We oftentimes would get, you know, patted back. We had a bag that was a mesh, so it was completely see-through. That was what we were allowed to bring in and out. And it was only supposed to have, like, very select things, which was usually the clear lunch that they gave us. Like, it was in a clear bag. And just a few other, like, little things. We were allowed to bring, like, socks or, like, change of underwear. Like, things that would make sense to go out for the day to either a forest or a highway type thing. But we got called out for all sorts of random shit. And in the particular, the absolute worst fucking thing that I hated, so let me rewind. I'm starting to already start talking about the next thing. So I never got in trouble, thankfully, but there were times where we almost got in trouble and people on my crew got in trouble. They never got in trouble with anything significant, but there were other people that did. You know, they tried to smuggle back in meth or a knife or heroin or, you know, whatever fun thing. And they, well, bye, see ya. You're going to get immediately sent back to real prison, and then you're also going to get a new charge, and you're going to be sent to the hole. But so I was always worried, like, say someone, you know, tries to do that. They get caught. The COs generally aren't going to just stop there, because now that has allowed them or given them probable cause to search either that entire person's crew, because usually it would be brought back or split between one crew, because they usually went all to the same work site, or two crews would go to the same work site. So, you know, it depends. So sometimes your sister crew could get searched too. If one of the crewmates on the other team got hemmed up, well, now both of you are getting searched because you guys both were at the same work site. So I never had anything. I never tried to bring anything in. I did not want any part of those things. But I was also, you know, just, I was in prison. So I was subject to the same treatment as these other people. So I had to strip naked several times. I had to have a flashlight shown up my asshole. And, you know, they didn't find anything, obviously. And I always made this joke. It happened to just, like, be a different officer each time. So every time I just had to, like, say, this has got to be the worst part about your job, isn't it? And they always agreed. They would always agree. I don't know why I was trying to make it less awkward. Like, I had to fucking say something. I don't know why. I don't know why. So, anyway, moving forward, we had so many different projects that were part of this organization that I worked for, or this department, or whatever you want to call it. And the one I hated the most, like the firefighting, it, some of those fires absolutely sucked. Like there were times where we'd be on a fire and the insects would be the worst part. There was these fucking insects. My crew boss always called them stump fuckers. I don't know if that was I don't think that was scientific terminology. I don't believe that is the genus or the species in any way. However, these fucking things were like, I don't know, they were born in the fires of hell because they can tolerate the fire. They can tolerate the heat. These little damn insects. And they would fly out of the fire like towards you and land on you with like bullet-like precision and immediately also bite you. And it was just like so painful because these things just shot out like missiles at times and you couldn't see them because they were so fast and just bam, bit, ow. So hated that. But about what I hated the absolute most was flood season. Yeah, okay, so I'm a wildland firefighter. Presumably I can also do emergency services. Flood calls, fucking hated flood calls. So much. First of all, I'm getting riled up here. The first and main reason I hated flood calls the most was because every time we got called to the place, it was going to get flooded the next year. Like we would save the place and then lo and behold, the same fucking place would get flooded the next year because they were in a valley that was prone to floods. Move! Just move! We save you once. Okay, we did our jobs. The second time, fuck them. We're not doing that again. We are not. No. You knew this was going to happen. You know that it's going to happen every single year. Your family and your family's family knows. Because it happens to you generationally. It is a never-ending cycle. Please move your goddamn house. And I hated those because, one, it's cold. It's windy. It's wet. The floods we're working in could be anywhere from, like, 40 to like 60 degree weather. Yeah, it was freezing. And sandbags, guess what? They weigh a lot. And it's worse when you have to make the fucking sandbags. Yeah, so here's how floods work. A dump truck shows up and dumps a bunch of dirt into a giant pile. And then you get a bunch of little bags that are empty and you have to use a shovel and your teammate to fill those up. For hours and hours and hours on end. just as it keeps raining on you and the wind keeps increasing and your hope forever going home just goes lower and lower. Now, I always had like a sensitivity to cold, so like my eyes would start watering, which would then lead me to crying, which would lead to a never-ending just torrential pour of tears. Because when my, like, the cold and the water and just, like, that horrible mix and sting of all those things, I couldn't stop it. So I was, like, crying more or less in this flood, which it was raining, so it was fine. No one really noticed. My hands were numb because, of course, it was freezing. So you can't really hold the bags. And it was just, like, horrible. We had to use overboots to wade out. Oh, I forgot to turn my phone off. So we had to wade out into the middle of like freezing water so we could stack these bags like as the waters like kept lapping against this person's property. And I'm like, this just seems like a futile effort, you know? How about I help you move a few things out of the house? We'll, whatever we can carry, we'll take. You know, it's got to weigh less than all these fucking sandbags. Let's do that. How's that sound? But no, we kept having to do that. And I did 2 years of flood calls. That was dumb. Same place. Three times, weirdly enough, because we saved the place and then, I don't know, it rained harder or something, so we had to go back. Super fun. Super fun. Anyway. A few of the projects I liked, we got to use a wood chipper. That was pretty interesting. Got to see a guy almost get sucked into the wood chipper, Fargo style. Not sure if anyone's seen that movie. Yeah, it was a close thing. It was a close thing. The safety bar only works if, one, the safety operator is paying attention. And then, two, if you're the one getting sucked in, it's going to be a little late by the time you catch that safety bar. So, like, yeah, it was close. He was getting dragged in. It would have been probably the most graphic thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Although, that's a different story for another time. Unrelated. I always thought I was going to see someone die on the fires because they gave us chainsaws. Like, we had only certain people that were trained as sawyers, presumably the most trustworthy. But at a certain point, it was like, all right, we just need someone. We need hands. And I, oh my God, I saw one sawyer on two different occasions. One almost ripped someone's stomach open with the chainsaw, like almost tipped him right at the belly button. And then a second, a separate time, he caught the dude in the leg, but it hit the dude's chaps, which they worked. Thankfully, Kevlar fibers are woven into the chaps, basically leg protectors, and it stopped the blades. Nothing would have stopped his stomach, though, because we don't wear any of those protective padding there. So, yeah. Saw a few of those things. But it was after prison. It was when I was at a halfway house. I saw someone's arm ripped off. Anyway, spoiler alert, that's a story for a different time. So, we had to do, wood chipping projects and whatnot. Those were always very loud, very annoying. I'm sure I still have sagebrush in my lungs. I probably have a few things there. From all the fires that I was on, like, you know, I could barely breathe with the protective stuff that they gave us, but the shit they gave us was like a fucking bandana. They're like, here, wear this bandana over your mouth if you need to breathe. But the fires were so hot, it like would melt the design or whatever like was in there. So you had this waxen like handkerchief, which wasn't going to do anything. It was worse. So most of the fires, I didn't use any sort of, protection for the air quality around me. It's not like we were given firefighter masks. We're wildland firefighters. We can't be hiking all those miles like that. So I don't know. I can tell you that when I was sent out to the campfire in California, that one, that whole town smelled like it was like made of asbestos. So I'm pretty sure that's going to come back to haunt me later. And all the retardant that I probably like inhaled or swallowed from when, those helicopters were dropping retardant on me. Should be fun. But I don't know. I got to accept that as like kind of a hazard of something, a situation that I put myself in. I have to humbly accept that, which will be a tough pill to swallow if anything actually happens. So, I guess let's end on a positive note. God, we took a dark turn there. We were going left and then we took a right. There were a lot of positive things that I got to do. I got to see incredible sights working for this department or whatever. Like, a lot of the places that I got to hike or go to were places that, you know, most people aren't going to get to go see or do. It's not like most people sign up to be a firefighter and then get to fly around in helicopters to the top of mountains. You know, only wildland firefighters presumably get to do that. So it was fun that I was able to experience something that not many people get to do. Sure, it was forced upon me, but I took it in stride. I tried to get what enjoyment I could out of it. Because there was just, like, things that I would never, ever, ever in a million years have otherwise experienced. Like, we ran into a pack of wild horses one time. Right after we had hiked down a mountain and put out a fire. We were hiking back to our buggy, taking kind of an alternate route. Because we'd scaled the mountain, now we're going down the other side and an easier path. And yeah, we just ran into a pack of horses. And they came up to us, kind of just very quiet, curious, but it was beautiful. It was incredible. Got to build some really cool ice luge slide thing when we were doing the burn piles. That was one of our favorite things because one of our tools was a shovel. You know, you can dig holes, but you can also use it for dirt for firefighting purposes. Yeah, when you're in the middle of nowhere, we don't have water. We got to use what we have. And surprisingly, just the dirt around you is usually the most effective. But you could also hollow out a slide, and now you can just fly a million miles an hour down. Because, well, you got to entertain yourself. What's the worst that's going to happen? They write you up or put you in the hole? I mean, you're just going back to prison anyway. So I was happy that our crew boss was cool enough to let us have some fun. Occasionally he'd buy hot dogs, you know, just kind of treat us like we were normal people. Allow us a semblance of freedom. And I respected him for that. It was nice, you know. It seems like the crew bosses had kind of like an even exchange. Like they understood that, okay, we're in prison. It is what it is. But they also understood, you know, that shouldn't also be taken for granted either. Most of the crew bosses treated people with respect. I mean, if they had to be dicks, they were. Especially given the people they were talking to. Like, prisoners, felons, oh my God, they can be some super stubborn people. But then when you realize it's just people in general are stubborn. People are annoying as shit. Have you met a person? They're terrible. Oh my God. Anyway, I think I'm going to digress here. I gotta go do my workout. But so thank you for tuning in, guys. Thank you very much. Things have been great on my end. I'm just going to kind of end here and say that I still have like a year left to parole. I have a new parole officer. They sent me a text the other day saying that there's like some new app that I have to sign up for where it's going to like take my picture or whatever. I got to check in. And that's fine. All that stuff's cool. And I'm trying to like schedule a vacation with them. But I still have like a year of parole. And it's odd to me. It's like so hands off that I really don't get the point of it, you know? Because if I was in need, for example, like I was a drug addict or someone who just couldn't get their life together, then I understand maybe the length of parole because it's, you know, to check in and to help me. But no one's really checking in to actually see if I need that help. And so I don't really know what the length of my parole has anything to do with my betterment. So I don't think it is because like I'm working full time. I've already paid off everything. And I did that like a while ago and they gave me 4 years worth of parole well, like 3.5. But with good time, I mean, I had like 9.5 years of parole. So with good time, it's down to like 3 or something. But like I said, what is parole really designed to do? Is it just to like, just keep eyes over your shoulder, just to, you know, make sure you're doing everything correctly? Or is it the what if? I think it's the what if. I think it's the, we could be looking over your shoulder. So as long as you don't know that we are or we aren't or we may be, that's, I guess, supposed to keep people in check. So I think that's really the only reason, like, parole is so long. Because, I mean, I wouldn't mind if they checked in with me. They'd see that I'm recording a podcast and that I have a cat. And that's about it. Like, my girlfriend lives with me and we don't do too much. You know, we kind of just keep to ourselves because you guys are crazy out there. But anyway, so I'm going to try and figure out, like, why I still have over a year of parole left when everything's, like, paid up, everything's good. I don't know. Maybe I can get an honorable discharge. Maybe that's the next thing I should start looking into, guys. If I do, you know, I'll keep you guys posted. The legal system is such a lengthy, convoluted, like, on a time delay kind of thing. It's just, it's an awful system. I really don't like it. Yeah, so thank you for listening, guys. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope to see you next week on The Road Less Traveled.